Welcome to the second part of the Exoskeleton Show with Dr. Matthew Dickinson. These two episodes are truly inspiring in the way Dr. Matthew Dickinson ranges across subjects as different as space travel and exoskeletons for Mars and linear discriminant analysis, permitting a wide range of complex systems, including hip skeletons for runners. The field is still in its infancy, but the potential benefits to humans are immense. Matthew introduces us to the ExoMove open source 3D printed exoskeleton, which schools will be able to build, to exosuits and e-legs, and to some of the many ways the technology can be used in sports, for example in skydiving. I think we'd better get started. Right, so in effect, what the AI is doing is sophisticating the response of a computer program that's driving the exoskeleton bit.
Yeah, I mean, think of it as what the AI is. If you had to think of it as a creature, if you will, the linear discriminant analysis is us just putting different bands into different areas. Then the AI, all that does is checks to make sure we've done the right thing.
And that we choose the right band.
Really. Exactly. And because the thing is, what's common in AI and machine learning is a lot of people think, it's all right, I'll just put it in AI. And you kind of go, well, these are very stupid. They do need to be told exactly what you're going to give them. And if they don't know what they're going to get, they're going to give you, or as my mentor used to say, if you put crap in, you will definitely get crap out.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
Exactly.
Would exoskeletons help people with arthritis, perhaps?
Now, because we're now at a really nice stage. We discuss the idea of paraplegic approach. So the design does change. Because under a paraplegic approach, what you're essentially doing is you're driving the body, because the joints really don't serve a great purpose apart from holding the limbs in position.
Yeah.
Or you have what they call a passive approach, where this is where it anchors to the ground. This is where we've been targeting. The idea of minimizing round joints, especially knees and round ankles, and it's exactly what we're aiming for. Now, what's been really interesting for me, because purely my background started out as mechanical and now moving to such a biomechanical aspect, I've been working with a very decorative nurse. He was a rehabilitation nurse for many years. And one thing he informed me about, which I'd never heard of, was actually ankle replacements. Now, okay. It was something. We've all heard of hip replacement. When it comes to hip replacements, he was telling me that you normally get the patient up as quickly as possible to try and get the bone to try and settle into position quite quickly.
Yeah.
However, when you're on an ankle replacement, there's a lot of gray area there. Ideally, they'd like to get people up and moving, but the second any force is going to go onto there, you're going to disrupt all the settle points that are going onto it. One of the targets.
What you mean by that is ligaments and other bones.
Yes.
And, yeah.
Yeah. So, because in essence, the joint itself is. He's going to kill me for saying this, but it's kind of like a hinge.
Yeah.
It's like a hinge that, because it's not really a hinge, but it's kind of like a hinge that sits into it. They'll cut out the section and replace that joint. And because it's such a sensitive area, but such a vital area. If you allow a patient to sit still for too much, what it'll actually do is it will essentially grow itself locked shut.
Yeah.
And what they want to do is try and get the patient moving. So we've been looking at the idea of using what we've been saying is a knee to ankle exoskeleton to allow people to be in motion.
Yeah.
However, removing that loading on the joints which is kind of like if you've got severe arthritis or anything like that, it offers that type of relief.
Yeah.
So over the summer, when we were doing the test, that is what we were testing for.
So could that ever be permanent on someone? So like a permanent exoskeleton to help with this sort of mobility function?
Now, the UK government with the industrial strategy, one thing that they were very interested in is mobility. If UK public, those who are not as healthy as us all, if they could have an opportunity to live a lot more of a longer and productive life, it actually has a less impact on the bigger implications for NHS, and it allows them to feel more free and a bit more independent.
Yeah.
And the answer is yeah, the idea of that in the future, you could actually start to see, well, I shouldn't say could, you actually will be seeing in the next few years, you'll be seeing people wearing these for fun. You'll be seeing people who are wearing these who, a great example I heard about one of these when I was in an ASTM meeting, we were discussing the idea of why you would wear one. You minimize loading, you minimize a lot of other things, but with some of the new smaller motors that have been developed, we're now in a position where years ago, this would have appeared on an electric bike. At first, when everybody said electric bike, it's like, yeah. But the idea of an electric bike allowing people to be, to go further under their, on the same fitness level.
Yeah.
The idea of having an exoskeleton that could encourage a better run, give you a better stride.
Yeah.
This is what we're already seeing already. Granted, some of what we're seeing, they need improvement, but any good design needs improvement.
Could you elaborate on that, please, Matthew? What sort of things are we seeing at the moment?
So I always forget what it's called. We have one at the moment, which is, I think it's called the hip skeleton. And this was released roughly 2-3 months ago. And this now is a waistband that comes round the waist, and we actually have a hip joint that goes down to the just at the top of the quadriceps. It wraps all the way around. And as you're running, tiny motors are actually engaging with your quadriceps, and they're attempting to just try and keep you in motion. They're trying to keep your stride in motion. And if you begin to lower in your efforts, what it will actually do is just try and trigger you up a little bit. And I'm told it's the strangest thing to run with. I have a friend within the committees who told me that they've tried it, and it's the strangest thing in the world. But yeah, things like that do already exist. But I think as we move forwards, as we start to see more of the smaller motors, cheaper controllers, microcontrollers appearing, I think we'll start to see these on cyclists. Cyclists in particular, or extreme sports, that's the big one I think that will really start to appear. So for snowboarding through to even skydiving, this is a type of thing. Just because the fox suits, for example, I know from the flying fox suits for some of these skydivers, I know it's quite impactful on shoulder joints. Massively, because obviously your arms come out and it pulls, it's pulling actually on them joints.
Pulling your arms off, yeah.
It genuinely is. So the idea of being able to use one of these would mean that they'd still get the thrill, but they would have less of the strain that could emerge.
That's crazy. Exactly. Mm-hmm. That is really genuinely insane. It's mind-blowing a little bit, to be totally honest. So, like, thinking really far future, borderline sci-fi here.
Yeah.
What's your opinion on these sorts of exoskeletons becoming more grafted to a sort of cyborg-esque human body configuration?
That's really cool, by the way. No. I say it's really cool, but this type of conversation genuinely hard. There's some interesting things. Now, I don't know if you know of one of my personal heroes, absolute hero, who's Noel Fitzpatrick. I love Noel Fitzpatrick. And his One for All research group,
yeah,
they proposed, it must have been 10 years ago, they proposed a new type of implant. And those that their group proposed that the implant could actually sit on humans as well, where you can have, I think it was titanium. So I don't know a lot about the actual paper, but I think it was titanium. The rod was placed into bone and the rod actually comes out and they seal round it by using some type of antimicrobial aspect. I don't know what that is. But what they proved is that you can have metal elements from your joints and be used for screwing things into place. So, for example,
oh my Lord,
Knowles Fitzpatrick proposed this originally with, I think it was an Alsatian. It was either an Alsatian or a retriever. And he proposed his very first method of doing it, where he put the metal into the bone and you could screw the prosthetic onto the actual dog's leg.
Right.
We now have humans who have the same procedure. And one of a prosthetics guy in America who has both forearms missing, I think he's a vet. He actually has these small metal rods sticking out. So that in itself is fascinating because that proposes one, we've got a way to have a rod that will allow us to have invasive sensing, more accurate results from our muscle contractions.
Yeah.
Two, we've got a key point that in the future, just in the future, we could be looking at points of, as we call them, mounting points. Yeah. This could be a point that we could use to actually actuate. How reliable that is, I don't know.
But let's get this straight. These aren't just mounting points. They're intelligent mounting points.
Yes.
So they do more than just the, you know, I was just thinking it gives a whole new meaning to the phrase being screwed.
It genuinely does. The idea of what this could offer, though, I mean, the beauty is we now sit on the fringe of sciences where some of the best men and women in the world are actually proposing some phenomenally good things. And I firmly believe by the time you're an OAP, Olivia, but I firmly believe that we will be seeing this technology to extend life, to give life opportunity back, because I know this is a very fringe comment and I know a lot of people don't like me talking about this, but I personally am a great lover of our emergency services. And when it comes to people that are in the armies, for example, we've got youngsters of the ages of sometimes 17 who give an awful lot more than what I've ever given to keep freedom. And I think if I can try and help them in their future, if they're injured, then I should be doing that. And that's what we all should do. So I'm excited for these types of things.
It sounds absolutely phenomenal. One of the things I'm ashamed to say is that I'd always thought of exoskeletons as an industrial commercial thing, and I'd never really thought of them in medical terms. But what you've done today is to paint a picture of them being used in widespread, coming into widespread use for medical purposes. What do you think will be the first of these things to effectively come onto the market?
Now, it's quite interesting. Being involved in the International Standards Committee, I get to see what's going on in Japan, Germany, Russia. And interestingly, an awful lot is developed in Poland. Massive amounts is done in Poland.
Yeah.
So in Warsaw, there's a particular professor there, and she's just nothing short of a genius. And I'd butcher a name if I tried to say it. Anyway, the thing is what I've seen is the UK is quite behind. We are struggling, there's so much already going on and there's so much opportunity for us to start doing.
Yeah.
And with some of the comments that are coming out of the EPSRC comments at the moment about development, some of the top line of developments in this actually is exoskeleton development. So if we consider the bigger picture of where the medical things are coming in first, I think the next big things that we would genuinely start to see is stroke trainers. One is called Harmony, and the lead engineer, phenomenal woman. She came up with an idea of that an exoskeleton would come over the shoulders and it has quite large stepper motors. And all it actually does is it helps the person move, articulate their joints. And she's been able to train this quite sharply into an AI system. And they're able to get good, because they actually read EEG signals as well. So they read from the brain signals and they're actually able to get good overlay of what type of motion is happening and how much signal is being received by the brain. So I think that it'll be something that will start to appear, because this has already been heavily developed.
That's effectively training stroke victims to move again.
Yeah. I mean, I, again, with my background being mechanical, it was such an eye-opener to really meet some of the people about.
Yeah.
So when I spoke to one of our professors here, she told me, in essence, our brain floods through with blood. We wash some of our synapses away. And she said, essentially, what we're trying to do is short-circuit that process. We're trying to move the arm to try and get the arm to trigger into the brain to actually rebuild that channel back up again.
Yeah.
And you think, it really is. And it just kind of shows how insanely sophisticated a human being really is.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. So strokes first, anything else?
I think strokes and I think moving forwards, we'll start to see more of building site quasi-active. So the term quasi-active comes on the idea that we use mechanical balancing. So you may end up with a spring above and beneath the joint, and you're trying to create equilibrium between it. So when you raise your arm, it absorbs that force that you need to put your arm into position. So it's like a camera mount. You'll have seen it on camera mounts when they're holding these big cameras. I think these will start to massively appear on the shelves, so to speak. I think
in effect, that's what a Steadicam is, isn't it?
That's right. What they're in essence trying to do is miniaturize that, come round the back, come over the shoulder, and actually hold the arms in position to minimize strain.
Yeah.
I think these will start to flood left, right, and center. I think we'll start to see some British manufacturers. I hope we better start seeing British manufacturers. I'm sick of Americans getting it all right when it comes to this. I'd like to think that we start to see some British manufacturing on this. Assistive technologies. I do like to think that thinking about the passive design, we may start to see people who won't need to have a crutch. We may start to see people who can have an exoskeleton and they won't need that crutch anymore. They won't have to hobble, so to speak.
Yeah.
And I think that is on the horizon. I think people who have, and they call it a stomach gate or a lower gate, where you're in essence, they crouch themselves down. They're all almost walking forwards because they're trying to get the center of gravity.
Yeah.
And I think that type of support around the lower limbs, that type of passive exoskeleton will start to appear as well. It's, as I said, we're on the horizon of something extremely exciting, I should say.
And this is something that that everybody should know, I think. Just to bring the conversation down to my level, are there any fun things about exoskeletons that you could see in the future? Will people wear them for fun? Apart from skydiving, of course.
Yes. Now, one thing that I think it was someone here, actually, a friend of mine here, he's been retired and he's a consultant here. And he came to me and said, all his life, he's loved walking. And he's seen friends who've not become as healthy anymore and they can no longer walk as well.
Yeah.
And he said to me, in the future, fun aspects of this is it will allow people to maintain that level of walking, to keep them mobile, to keep them as active and as excited, and giving them a good active level of life back. So I think that's another thing that'll appear.
So as long as the battery doesn't run out halfway up the hill.
Ah, now, this can be typically dependent on whatever the ailment is.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. If they do need an awful lot of support, yes, batteries will become an issue.
Yeah.
However, if this is an arthritic element, because we're talking about a mechanical passive element, it won't matter, which is really exciting.
Almost charging itself, kind of thing.
Because what we'll be doing is we'll be using the passive side, and the loading on their joints, which would lead them to pain, will be minimized because the passive side will be absorbing that force. So it will feel less stressful on their joints to walk. So they'll still get just as tired, but there'll be less stress on the joints.
But why won't the batteries run out?
Because on a passive one, it won't have batteries. It's all about it being anchored.
Yeah.
And depending on what the ailment is, so let's say you've got a lot of muscle atrophy, so you're losing a lot of muscle density, then yes, of course, we need batteries to be able to power that assistive element.
Yeah, I know that. I think Olivia was just about to get onto this, but a lot of cars now have brakes that, on resistance, they feed back into the batteries.
Recovery.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's very much off the shelf now. You can actually buy. In fact, I actually have some small ones. I was going to just show you, but you can actually buy them now where they do genuinely feedback recovery. So you're absolutely right. You feed it in, and in that process, that electrical process is generated. And don't get me wrong, I think, don't quote me on this, but I think they're only something like 18% efficient, but it's still 18% of recovery.
Mm.
Yeah.
And as this technology gets better and better, as the motors become more smaller, that's when we'll start to see this being placed into things like recovery devices, assistive devices.
Yeah.
And then we will start to see recovery, and this type of technology will go even longer. It's so exciting.
I think will we ever get to the point where an 80-year-old will win the marathon?
Well, I still take pride in that we've come to a point where a paraplegic ran the London Marathon.
Yeah, that's immense.
So she wore the E-legs and she walked the entire marathon. And you know, you sit there and go,
wow,
that's incredible.
That is incredible.
And as a side joke, we got into a meeting 6 months ago, and somebody said, we don't have to worry about flying exoskeletons. It's never going to happen. And then the military have appeared, haven't they?
Of course. I saw the video.
Yeah, it's thrown a huge curveball where we've gone, oh my God, they can fly.
Just for someone who didn't see this, could you explain?
Yes, so the original theory was using these extremely dangerous pulse engines. But basically, it's a miniaturized engine which sits on the lower end of the forearm outside. So if you were to think of it, it sits on the lower side of where your hand sits. Yeah. Now you have two, left and right. What you're able to do is from this, you've then got an exoskeleton structure that comes over the shoulders down into the fuel line. And you trigger by your thumbs, and this will allow you to fly.
It's a jetpack.
It's a jetpack.
That is incredible.
It is incredible.
And if you associate that with some of the stuff you're building, we could have some very interesting things.
Well, I mean, it's when we got into meeting with the American, some of the militaries who are in these meetings, they went, how long will they fly for? It's like, no, don't put a jetpack on there yet. We can't guarantee that's going to be all right.
Yeah, they're always keen on that.
Yeah. Yeah, but then once you say flight, everybody thinks, oh, it's Iron Man. It's like, it's really not.
Not yet.
No, yeah.
You'll have to buy the next round.
Yeah, exactly.
So we've got a lot of kids out there who are thinking about their futures and wondering what they're going to do and how they're going to do it. It seems to me that this sort of field is one that youngsters could not only get into, but could have marvelous careers in. What do they have to do to get into it?
Wow. So the beauty is there is so many avenues of approach.
Mm.
When it comes to kids in school, let's say we're talking high school. My first approach would always be choose a science, choose something that really gets you excited.
Yeah.
So this could be maths, this could be physics, or this could be DT or IT. Because the beauty is all of these play a massive, significant role in changing what this technology is going to do for the future. Yeah. Once you've actually chosen this, reach out. If you see something and you think that is amazing, don't be frightened of actually reaching out to that person saying, I like this. Can you tell me more? Because 90% of the time, they'll be busy. So don't be off put if it takes them about a month to get back to you.
Yeah.
But when they do come back, because they will come back, take their advice. Yeah. This can be things like volunteer for different things, reach out to anybody and ask them what they do.
Yeah.
If there is anything that you can get involved with it as much as possible. This type of technology is massively on the horizon.
Mm.
And we, as developers go, we are still very much at a primitive state.
Mm.
So the big questions, I guarantee we will not be answering in my lifetime. However, coming to the end of Olivia's, maybe.
What a lovely thought.
Yeah, I know.
And
what I would always say to youngsters is choose that topic, but really just reach out and don't be afraid of asking. Because a lot of the time, these people who are insanely crazy about what they do, they come across very intimidating, but they're really not.
Yeah.
They come across like, do you know who I am? I'm a professor, I'm a doctor. Don't be frightened of that neither, because the ones who are truly passionate will talk your ear off.
Yeah.
that's fantastic advice.
And
they'll help.
Yeah, and they really will. And I think I will always call myself a child of science, always. I'll never know it all. And I think I'm quite proud not to know it all, because I think there's always things to learn.
Yeah.
I think there's always new things to learn, and never for a second think that you're ever going to know more than another person. So when I walk into a classroom, for example, I know for sure I won't know everything. I'll know quite a bit, but not as much as I won't know everything. So I'm always up to discuss, propose, come up with new ideas, because that's what it's all about.
Well, you were talking earlier on about the 15-year-old who came up with that idea at the start.
And Christina.
That's what it's all about, isn't it? It's about having that flexibility of mind.
It is. And it's the beauty is, and I've always loved this about youngsters, is that I think it was... is it Neil Tanner's dad? I forgot what the actual physicist called.
Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Ah, thank you, Olivia. I think he famously said that we're all born extremely intelligent, but we get this intelligence taught out of us.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't say that as in like every school teacher does, because I've met some school teachers that are so engaging that I still wish I was in school.
Yes.
Yeah.
But some can easily destroy people's hopes and dreams when it comes to things like that. Now, Christina, I'm always been quite keen to keep her involved. So I still email her and her mum to this day.
Wonderful.
And I met with Christina 6 months ago in London.
Yeah.
And so now she always wanted to help, always wanted to help. And she managed to get a scholarship with the NHS, and she's now at Salford University, trained to become a rehabilitation nurse.
Oh, fantastic.
And wonderful. Yeah, so a mom, when I first started speaking to her, she was like, oh, this is my girl. Look at what she's but the point is with it, is that it's all just about that idea. And yeah. she wasn't restricted. She wasn't told it wouldn't work. She just asked why. And yeah. that's what it's all about. Just yes. asking, why is that not happening?
Yeah, yeah. And is there a slightly better way of doing it?
Exactly. And that is where these young geniuses emerge. These, yeah. these. He'll kill me for talking like this, but my son, he's always pushing these questions. We can get into, we can kind of sit there. And even when I met him years ago, he always asked why. And you know, he kind of think to himself, oh, I don't know, go and look. And it's these types of things. And it's to see these types of things, which really, really, yeah, makes you excited and quite privileged in many ways.
Yeah, Dickens once said that children would be all geniuses if they didn't have it beaten out of them.
Oh, that's a good, that's going to stick.
And I suppose that's exactly the same, but yeah. 200 years later,
yeah.
probably,
yeah,
as your comment. So children need to not be intimidated. They need to have confidence that their ideas should be listened to and will be listened to. And that's what you're proposing.
Yeah, and the... obviously, from a personal perspective, dyslexics in school, there's still this perception. Mm. And I still hear this to this day when somebody says, oh, you're dyslexic. Does that mean you can't read or write? And I genuinely still hear this yeah. from some proficient people. And you kind of go, you really are uneducated. You yeah, really
what century are you living
yeah,
in?
Yeah, oh, my good yeah. God. And it's so when it comes to the Athena Swan approach, which is this diverse approach, mm. I'm such in support. Mm. And I don't think children should ever feel that they're not good as, that they're not valuable, because the truth of it is, it just takes one idea to change the world. Let's face it. Batteries, yeah. for example, batteries yeah. are still not quite there where we'd like them to be. Mm. And it's going to take one youngster to say, have you done that?
Yeah.
yeah. Have you thought about this?
Yeah, that's genuinely what it will be. And it genuinely will work that way. And if I could be any type of instrument to try and help a youngster think about this for the future, then I will be.
That's admirable.
That's a fantastic thing to say. Thank you, Matthew. And thank you very much for your time today. It's been fascinating.
It really has.
Oh, I'm glad. No, I'm glad I wasn't too over the top excited, because I do love this topic. And boy,
no, your excitement and enthusiasm comes across, and I'm sure people will.
It's contagious.
Absolutely appreciate it. Yeah, it is contagious. Yeah, I could go out and wear one now.
you're first on the list when I start manufacturing.
Oh, great. Thank you. Something that enables me to leap tall buildings. That's what I want.
That always makes me think of Nikolai Yarkin with his design. Yeah. If you do get a chance, you should look and you go, wow, what was he thinking?
I shall do this right now. Thanks very much, Matthew, and we'll see you again hopefully soon.
Yes, anytime. It was great to speak to you both.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. Bye for now.
Bye. We'll be right back.